You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, March 30th, episode 3915, brought to you by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
Well, good morning, everybody. We have a fun show planned for you today. Elisa Wallace is going to join us and tell us about her recent competition at Road to the Horse. We're excited to hear about that. And in Where Are They Now? That segment that we're doing all this year, we're catching up with host of the Western radio show. Now we're going back into the old days of the Horse Radio Network. Alan Moorhead's going to join us. Plus, this day in equine history brings us back to 1917 and the Nursery Stud Lexington, Kentucky. In the Auditor Post Show, we're going to review the shocking things auditors have said as horse people that others that are not horse people didn't quite understand. And I looked through the list. There's some very funny ones in there. So we're going to review those. The latest United States Census Bureau just confirmed that Ocala is the number one fastest growing metro area in the country. That of all of the places in the entire country, Ocala.
Lucky again, you.
No, this is not good. You know. I went to town the other day. We live further out of town now, so I don't go into Ocala proper very often. It's like, oh my God, it is worse traffic. The whole thing is just worse than it was when we moved here 12 years ago. But Ocala was number one. Myrtle Beach was number two, another one of my favorite places, actually. And then there are, of the top 10, three of them are in Florida. So all of those Florida man stories, apparently it's not discouraging people from moving here.
I'm doing my best.
I mean, we try. Florida gets so much hate and so much razzing about things that happen in Florida, yet everybody still wants to move here, apparently. By the way, Norman, Oklahoma was not on the list.
Oh, thank God. But they still feel the need to make lots of turnpikes.
They're counting on the day when you are number one on the list. They're planning for that. All right, let's do some Daily Winnies.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Hope it lasts all year long. Happy birthday, friends.
We have one auditor birthday today, Paula Hansford. Happy birthday, Paula. Have a great day.
Well, I got a couple of things. First of all, I have to mention our friend Brandy Burrows and her new horse, Bonita. Congratulations, Bonita and Amigo need to hang out since they speak Spanish. And also, I wanted to give a shout out to TJ from the Maytag Ranch. Came out to pick up this weekend. Auditor Shelley. Okay, our auditor Shelley had a horse named Diamond, and she opted to have Diamond go to the Maytag Ranch. And so TJ came and picked Diamond up, and in true awesome business person's fashion, offered to give me a finder's fee, and I refused. And I was like, no, I'm just helping Shelley get her horse a great home at the Maytag, and I'm helping the Maytag get a great horse. So, of course, he brings an entire case of Tito's handles, like six giant handles of Tito's vodka, because somebody in the Tito's Corporation has a place at the ranch. So they provided me with that. And
I hope that lasts you more than a week, Jamie. I hope you're good for a little while now.
I'm working hard, Glenn. I've got to get there. So anyway, I just want to let Shelley know that they got Diamond back to the ranch and they were like, oh my God, this horse knows everything. And I rode the horse a few times. I rode Diamond a few times while she was here. And I'm like, he was here. And it's such a great horse. And they're super excited to have him. However, unfortunately, Diamond is not being called Diamond anymore, Shelley. They changed Diamond's name. Because of the finder's fee, Diamond's name is now Tito. He He said, I sponsored that horse, so I am naming that horse.
I love that. It's a great name for a horse, actually.
Tito is out there. If I would have thought of that, my Andalusian would be called Tito right now.
Well, enjoy that. Case. And you said it's the large bottles, too?
Oh, yeah. The okay. handle. The handles. That's a lot. That's a lot. To be fair, the finder's fee would have been more, but I was like, this is way better. This is way better. Also, I did go on a trail ride with Chad, and I wanted to mention this to you, Glenn, because
did Chad do this after imbibing in some Tito's or was this? No. Okay.
No, and I had this idea. I think he feels sorry for me because I don't have Barrett anymore, and Anna's not here.
Play friends anymore.
I don't have any friends to ride with, and so I was like, "He's like, are we gonna go in the house?" I'm like, "I gotta go on a trail ride first. I gotta take Ace out and get him out in the woods. He's been riding in the arena. I gotta need to get him out." He's like, "Do you want me to go?" And I was like, "Yes!" I'm like, "Absolutely!" And he was like, "Oh, cool." Like, I mean, I know he was just offering because he felt sorry for me, but like I was like, "I'll tack up Carl." And so he got on Craigslist Carl and we got into the woods, and the little track that I usually take is about like a little 20-minute loop. But the guy, we use our neighbor's property. He let us put a gate in and we ride through his property, and he's cut all these new trails. So I was like, "Let's explore." I got lost in like a 30-acre plot, had no idea. Ace was like not happy. I couldn't just drop the reins and he got me back. We rode in the woods and then I finally got out of the woods, but like on the other side of the property. So we ended up riding around like on streets and neighborhoods. That man will never volunteer to ride with me again. Do you know how long our ride was?
No.
An hour and 53 minutes.
Oh yeah, that's about an hour and 40 minutes too long.
I was like, I burned it all in one day.
He's not walking today. He's
got all these new trails. I was like, let's go this way. And then I'm like, oh God, where are we? And then of course he's like, well, that's obviously Southwest. And I'm like, what do you mean that's Southwest? He's like, look at the sun. I'm like, we're in the woods. And he's like, look, you can't tell by the sun. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not a pilot who's learned navigation. He's like, well, obviously. And I'm like, I don't even know what time it is. I don't know where we are. It was like the biggest fight we've had in like a year because I didn't know what direction that was. And how could I not know that that was Southwest?
So what was supposed to be a relaxing ride in the woods didn't turn out that way. Huh?
You know what? It ended up great. We had a great time and it was fine. But yeah, I was shocked. I'm like, what do you mean that's Southwest? He's like, we just have to go northeast. Our house is north. I'm like, how do you know that? How do you not know that? And look at the sun. I'm like, we're in the woods. I can't see the sun. How do you?
Is that anyway, why he texted me? He wanted to put an ad on Craigslist. And he was asking me, he wants to put an ad on there. He wanted to say, my wife needs a play buddy.
My wife needs a friend.
Anybody that knows about riding horses can please come over and play with my wife.
Seriously, she is like exhausting me. Yeah. I got back and I was like, oh, that was really fun. We explored so much. And he's like, yeah, it was great. Carl was really cool. And then I got off and I looked at my thing and I'm like, oh my God, we've been riding for an hour and 53 minutes.
He can't walk today. He's limping to the airplane.
It's all good. All good. Everything is fine. I had a blast.
You know, beyond the worm floor, your trailer has a roof. And they also have a thing called Seal and Chill Roof Coating. Springtime sunshine can quickly turn your trailer into an oven, especially where Jamie lives. I stayed in our trailer. I slept in our trailer when we were at your house in 130 degrees. But Worm's specialized roof application can reflect 90% of the UV rays, potentially dropping the interior temperature by up to 60 degrees. This high-performance coating does more than just beat the heat. It creates a protective barrier that seals seams and prevents minor leaks from turning into major problems. Start your season right by protecting your investment and your horse's comfort from the roof down to the floor, down to the road. You can accomplish it all at Worm Flooring. Find a dealer near you at wormflooring.com. Let's start out the day with somebody who just got back from competing in Kentucky.
Oh, so cool. Time to welcome friend of the show, Alisa Wallace. She is home from competing at Road to the Horse and is here to tell us about it. She came from last place after the first two rounds to reserve champion at the end after an amazing obstacle course the final day. Alisa Wallace, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Is it true that you're currently on a horse, like as we're talking?
Yes, I am riding Bugatti as we speak.
We love that. Yay!
I love it. I love it. Well, getting to the, let's focus on the Remuda and your first day. I'm curious to know why you picked Windy out of the Remuda.
So she was actually my top pick. We were given the horses short video clips and their bloodlines and everything back in December. So I did kind of like a deep dive, like studied all of the bloodlines, kind of like we had 11 horses. So it's almost easier to figure out ones that you don't want versus ones that you want, if that makes sense. But I was able to chat with Stacy Westfall, which was really nice. And she's like, you know, at the end of the day, you want a curious horse, but you want a hot horse too. Like you want a very forward thinking horse. So when I watched the videos, Windy had, she was like the biggest mover. A lot of them are nice movers. They're daisy cutter type movers, but she's different. She had a lot of freedom and movement in her body. And, you know, she's, if you had to pick a more English one out of cowbred horses, that I think would be the one I went to. So it was kind of nerve wracking because I was last draw. So I got the highest number. We had to pick chips out of a hat and lowest number goes first and highest goes last. And I was last and it was so nerve wracking because it's like, don't pick her, don't pick her, don't pick her. And
you're trying to be like, oh, look at that bay over there. He's so nice. You know, trying to get people around.
Yeah. And she was so curious. Like she's like, hey, she's very gregarious. Like, how's everybody going? And there was other little snippets that I really, Road to the Horse did a good job. Like they showed us the horses loading up and, shipping our way and stuff like that. And Windy has some very unique hind leg markings because there's like six chestnut fillies with blaze and chrome. But I was able to recognize she was one of the first ones to walk on the trailer. And I was like, noted. like she doesn't mind going up into that trailer, you know, so that's something that I liked. And then the other thing I really liked is we got to see them move around and she was always like first one out, but like she didn't mind being in the middle, the outside, the front, the back, like she didn't care. And she was very inquisitive and like looking up a lot. So those are all, and she would also like walk up to the wranglers to the flag. So I was like, okay, well, she's a pretty ballsy little thing. Like, all right. But yeah, it was so nerve wracking after Ryan went and I was like, oh my God, don't. Please don't, please don't, please don't. When he didn't pick her, I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to go walk through. Like I knew she was my pick, but then she kind of like sealed the deal when she like sniffed my face and stuff. So I was like, well, I guess it was meant to be. So.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were sorting through quarter horse bloodlines. If I was told to sort through quarter horse bloodlines, I would have a zero idea about that at all. But talk to me about thoroughbreds or warm bloods, I might have a better idea. Were you like that too? Did you have to take a crash course on quarter horse lineage?
I have some friends that have bred quarter horses and do barrel racing. And so like, you know, I chatted with them and, I mean, it's not too, I'm kind of a bloodline geek anyway. So anytime I get to go and learn about horses and, I mean, any sire you pull up on her bloodline is like $1 million sire in cow or reining. So she comes, you know, Pitchfork doesn't breed a slouch. That's for sure. Right. They breed really nice horses. So, and then also going and seeing, cause Road to the Horse is kind of a thing of its own. So you've got, you know, to train a horse in that kind of time period, you need kind of a busybody horse. And so seeing, you know, the relations, I actually went and I hung out with Tick and I met his two horses that he won previously won with. Mm-hmm. And because there were two fillies that were related to both of his sires. So, gotcha. You know, I was just trying to get as much information as possible, which I think the filly number 8, which is Sunny Lucky Cat, who Tiffany had, was the full sister to Tick's horse last year, the Buckskin.
Okay.
Suncat, I believe is his name. So I have to remember all these things. It's amazing my brain did that. but what's interesting is that we can't like touch them or do anything with them in the pens, but you are all week. You can see them in the pens. There's kind of like a buffer for us. So you can kind of see how they interact. And my filly, Wendy, was definitely not the boss. She was getting whooped up on by Tiffany's mare. And Ryan's mare was the big boss. So that one, the gray mare, was very much like, she was the boss. No one told her what to do. But Tiffany's mare was like vying for that spot a little bit. And she just went to whooping on Wendy. So I think Wendy was relieved, honestly, when she got to come to the round pen with me and got scratches. So, you know, and my mind frame, yeah, like my mind frame going into it, knowing that I have mares, like mares are, you gotta make them feel good. Like, so I tried to make sure that all of my sessions, I started off in a nice place and I ended in a nice place. And just so that she would think that, like I said, the juice is worth the squeeze a little bit.
Now, when you start training them, did you have some specific goals for each round, or did you just kind of go with the flow and see where you went?
We're given like a rubric, like we're given what the judges are looking, what we're scored on. So me and my pin wrangler, Kevin Graham, like I knew, you know, you have preparation for haltering, preparation for saddling, like groundwork, how the horse moves forward, like all these things. So, but then I went in and I started off the very first day, because what we had noticed is the mares were handled with flags. So like the wranglers move them around with flags. So they already had that point of communication. So I figured, okay, well, I'm not going to go in there first with the rope. I'm going to go in there with the flag, move her feet and get that little bit of communication. And I had practice roping, you guys. Like
I saw you do it. I was like, damn, girl.
Did you roped him? Is that how you practiced?
Well, I have a friend who's a roper, and so he gave me some good pointers. And it's always been a skill, like, and we're training Mustangs. Like, you got to, it's a good skill to have. And so the joke was I was able to just walk up and put the loop on her. And I was like, well, go figure. I practiced roping and I didn't have to rope her. But I still used preparation there. Like, even though I put the rope around her neck, I still wanted her to get like pressure off the rope. And I really like that part in the beginning stages before I put a halter on them. So, and I found if you can get a horse to soften that neck pressure a little bit, they tend to move off the halter a lot better because you already have their feet kind of engaged with their brain. So, long story short, I just kind of went to work. Like, she's giving me all the green lights, and the wrangler told me about her. He's like, you know, these types, you know, if you go to pick in a fight, they're going to buck you off. And I was like, noted. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, she'd get frustrated. She'd get a little bit upset, but I tried to give her tools for those moments. But in the beginning, and I've done this with my Mustangs before where I hop on them kind of halfway and kind of use that as a building of trust. But everyone got all excited that I got on her in like the first 5 or 6 minutes. And I was like, oh, okay. Didn't think, I mean, that's preparation for saddling. I don't know. Like, I was told that I was so different, but I was like, I don't know. I just do things. I'm doing all the same things. It just might be in a different order, right? Because like every horse is a little different. But in my mind, like, I mean, I grew up watching Chris Cox and all those guys. Sorry, we spooked.
be careful out there, Robin.
Yeah. And so, like, in my mind, I don't really do anything. It's all pressure release and timing and all that stuff. So, but what kind of word on the street was is that on the first round, I went too fast. And I think a little bit of it was, if you weren't watching me the whole time, because things are pretty subtle, even though I think that it's obvious, that if the judges were like looking back, they'd be like, oh, she didn't have a halter on it. Oh, she's sitting on it now. Oh, it's jumping a barrel now. Oh, wait, what? You know, it didn't really make sense versus like if you were watching me the whole time pretty closely. But, you know, it's not easy to judge. There's four round pens. Like, there's no way they're going to be able to see everything. Like, it's that's really hard.
Well, and the thing is, like, you're doing all of this, but at no time did your mare seem stressed about it. And I think that is the biggest tell as to whether you're going too fast, if your horse is reacting in a way that is not forward thinking, you know, like, hey, we're going to do, you know, right. If they get super stressed and bugged out about it, then yeah, you've gone too fast. But I never saw that from your mare.
Right. And that was, I mean, yeah, she got a little bit uncomfortable on parts. Like when I put on the, she was protective about her belly, which, you know, they are going to be, there might be a little ulcery or what have you, but, you know, she seemed like she liked the softer girth, like around her belly. Cause when I had my surcingle on her, that was a little stiffer. She was uncomfortable. She was like, she pulled some moves out and I was like, okay, I see that. But I made her, you know, go forward. So she understood to go forward through it because I knew like they're going to have responses. They're going to do bucks, but is it going to be a scared buck or is it going to be like, well, this is a little irritating, I'm going to crow? And I would rather go with the, this is a little irritating crow than get the heck off of me, you know.
And that's what I meant. I mean, obviously we're pushing these horses because we're getting so much done in such a short time, but to me, like, it, she just never appeared that angry buck, you know, although you did sit a rear that, oh my gosh, woo, girl, that was amazing. And your bareback, that was incredible.
Yeah, that was the second day. So she did come out and she was even more improved from the second day. But this is how, and I don't know, because people accuse me of having an easy horse. And I was like, she's not easy, you guys. Like, no way, Jose.
Let me stop you. Okay. As a trainer of these kinds of horses, when people tell you, you got the easy horse, it is the greatest, take it as the biggest compliment, even though they don't mean it as a compliment, because that means you made it look easy. And that's the thing is like, You to see if they're easy horses, you got to judge them like the first second they come out, because you get to work and yeah, you got the easy one. You know, you achieve things. Like say you go run a cross country course for the first time. Oh my God, that horse was so easy. Thank you. Because yeah. I made it look easy. Oh, that's a super buzzword for me. Sorry. Go ahead.
It was funny because she was so sensitive that I accidentally grabbed her little goat hairs when I was putting my leader up on her to pop on a rider. And she was a little anxious about when I was getting on her, which is fairly common, but I tend to take that because it's forward movement. You can always go back and teach a stop. So it's easier to teach a stop than it is necessarily getting them to move forward when they're tight. So, and I had a four knot halter on her and I just went to ask her and she was being a little fussy and she's like, I'm mad. And she reared and I was like, oh, we're going up. And then I was like, are you going to do anything else? And she's like, no. And then because people were like, oh, you rewarded the rear. I was like, well, if you saw, it's very subtle, but I asked her to keep turning left and she did. And then I rubbed her and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to change the halter out. So I switched to like a rope, kind of hackamore. It's pretty soft, which generally horses tend to like. And she was better, but she's still a little fussy in it. And so then I switched her back to a softer two knot halter that they actually gave us, which is very pretty navy. And that was what she seemed to like the best. So, and again, we are scored on adjusting to the needs of the horse. So I'm like, heck yeah, man, I'm like nailing it, like check mark, like I'm doing all the things, like I'm getting her to move forward. And on the second day, we knew that she would be happier going outside, out of the round pen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was still a little fussy, but every time I could get her, I added more pressure by the gate where they would go back to their pens. And then when she got going forward, I would release her and have her just hang out and chill, like up at the top, like as to mm-hmm. the middle of the round of the arena as I could, and just had her like chill. And I think that made like a big difference in her mindset in being relaxed in that arena. Mm-hmm. And then also with the crowds, like there was so much clapping sometimes for other people that when I was in the middle of something like swinging my leg over, I really had to stay focused and not be like, oh gosh, ah, like my leg's going, you know what I mean? Cause like it could be hard to get distracted and be like, oh heck, everyone's clapping. There's energy. I'm about to swing my leg over. She's going to break in two. But I had to be like, nah, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah. And I think she really learned to not feed off of, because she really didn't like the energy in that arena on the third day was insane. And she was like, besides her little spook and
yeah.
Did that surprise whatever. You, by the way? Because, you know, I used to announce that show for many, many years. And I don't think the competitors, unless they've been down there, realize how loud it can get when you're down in that arena.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, what did my fall or was the loudness of
just,
it?
Just that, were you able to tune it out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It makes you feel good, especially when your horse is like totally fine about it, because when they don't really respond to that and they're just in sync with you, then it makes you happy and more relaxed. It makes everything better. So that really didn't affect too much. But, you know, the second day, and we could go back, like me and my pin wrangler, because we were like, okay, well, what did they not like about round one? Like, why was I scored so low? And we were like, okay, I guess it was because I went too fast. So round two, I tried to make sure I showed my transitions and went slower. But again, like I always, it was funny too, because, you know, everyone's like, it's not a lot of time, but honestly, every time I walked in that round pen with her, I felt like I had a ton of time. I was like, I don't even need to be in here this long. I can be here for 20 minutes. You know, I don't need to do all the things that I could have gotten accomplished for her. She's so smart. Sometimes with the smart ones like that, the more you do, the more they feel like they're being punished in some spots. So mm-hmm. that's where I really tried to focus on changing things up for her. And on that second day, she really liked when we had the obstacles put in there. And once she started to understand what I asked, she was like, oh, this is so much fun. And I ended that day, I think at 2 minutes, and just took all of her tack off and spent massaging her, making sure I checked her back wasn't sore, like just going through all the checks. So I kind of knew where her body was at. And, you know, with that amount of work that we did, just, you know, doing checks on her and making sure she always felt good at the end. And then, you know, round three was, it was a really great feeling when she trotted up to me in the round pen. Yeah. I walked in with the flag, and cause she was pretty, I mean, anytime you have a horse that gets separated, they come into a new environment, they're in a round pen, their energy is up really high. They're emotional. So, I tried to be really consistent on getting her to like center herself and take a deep breath before I ever started really any work. And she really responded well to that. Mm-hmm. And she was so good. I was so proud of her in the round pen because she was so soft and she walked, trot, and cantered off of my voice cues. And I'm like, look, I'm checking all the boxes for getting her to go forward. Like, I don't even have to put pressure on her. Mm-hmm. And like my knee had been bothering me a little bit because I had a bad fall in November, I had a horse kind of fall on me and I broke 3 ribs and pissed off my MCL.
Jeez.
So I had my step block in there and I was like, you know, she's pretty smart. I have introduced getting her on from the step block, but I think she's going to appreciate me not jabbing my toe into her rib cage because right. I couldn't quite like manipulate my body in the right way. And she was like perfect for me to get on her. And you know, it was the funniest feeling when being on a green horse, and you'll get it every now and then. Like when I was like, okay, we're going to leave the round pen. Let's go up to the gate. And she sucked up to the gate like a broke trained horse knew how to open the gate. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. she's ready to play the game. And I knew on day 3, like game plan, she's not the type to practice. Cause again, if she does it good and you keep going, she's going to think that you're punishing her in a way.
Right, right.
And the feeling I had, like, you don't come across many young ones that are that secure and brave, but like, I was like, ah, oh, she's not even spooking to get down to the bottom of the arena. Like she doesn't care. So I knew I could go kind of quickly through the rail work and let her just move along instead of trying to picking at her, if that makes sense. Yeah. But that did bite me because going to the right, she did spook and got a little insecure in that one spot. And in hindsight, like she told me, like she crowed a little bit in that canter and I was able to like bring her back down. She felt fine. And then when I picked up the canter again, and I should have just waited it out. But because I declared it and because I was like, oh, she picked up the canter right away. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 strides, felt great. And then I was like, oh no, we are cutting an invisible cow right now. And there is no sticking that. And I mean, I figured I was going to hit the dirt at some point. I mean, she's so quick. But I knew like the minute I got up and then I just whistled to her and she kind of met me at the mounting block and I was like, all right. And then picked up the canter. And this is how I know it wasn't like her like trying to buck me off because she was upset. Because the minute I was able to pick up the canter again, she felt very, you know, when they are scared, when that happens, mm-hmm. you have to kind of go and reassure them. But she picked the canter right back up and she's like, oh yeah, I'm fine. And I just let her do all the obstacles. She had a great time.
She really did. Like she just understood it. And again, you're lucky you got the easy horse because all that work you did before had nothing to do with her behavior going into the last day. It is interesting to me. Like, you know, you post training stuff on Facebook and I know you get this like so much, but where people comment on your training by looking at a video and, oh, you did this, or they love to tell you what you did wrong. That's got to be so hard to have it just live. Like people are judging your every move live right in front of you and then they want to tell you all about it. Is that true?
Well, I mean, that is the insecurity going into this thing, right? Like that mm-hmm. is you don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to feel like you're incompetent. You don't want to do wrong by your horse. And that when I just made sure that, you know what, I can read Mustangs. If I can train a Mustang, I can train this one and uh-huh. I can read this one. And at the end of the day, like if I don't feel like it's right, okay, well, last place is $5,000. It's fine. Like that's kind of my mindset. Now, I do go in there
most times. So.
Exactly. You know, like you do your best. And it was interesting because, you know, again, people are like, oh, she was going too fast on round one. But it was really interesting after my round 3, because again, I did so much prep work with that mare. Right. You know, I had her dragging stuff. I was throwing a rope on her. I made sure that she started to understand what the click sound meant and then building on the reward of her doing a good thing for me. And so it was really cool to have your old cowboys and come up and cowwomen too, like that said, you know, I did not understand what you were doing on the first day, but I understand now.
Oh, yes.
And I learned, awesome. And I learned so much from watching you. And they were like, had a tear in their eye, which was so heartfelt. And the fact that, you know, Wendy was able to bring that type of emotion to people was very special. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Now, now that you have her, which, by the way, I've loved following along with all your videos with shipping her home and getting her home, and she's loving on you. What are your plans with her? Is she going to be your eventing quarter horse, or are you turning Western?
Yeah, you bringing her to Kentucky the end of the month? What's the story?
Oh, no. Gosh. No, Fledgy will come to Kentucky. Good old Fledge. You know, I don't know. We'll see. I was very blessed to be able to go into a partnership to get her because she is a very well-bred quarter horse mare, so they did not give her away. and so I was very thankful to the Pitchfork for allowing me to figure out a way to go into partnership and be able to bring her home. You know, it's kind of like a little bit of an open door with her. I think she is going to make a nice little event horse. I think she'll be able to do that pretty successfully. However, she is bred really well in the cow cutting and reining. And so I think it would be really fun to learn another discipline. And I have a really nice, well-bred horse for that. So, and not to detract also from the Mustangs either, because I've been able to work on cows and learn roping and stuff with my Mustang. So it's it's another ball to juggle.
You know what? Here's the thing. I just bought a horse and everybody's like, what are you going to do with it? I'm like, I just want to have fun. I'm just going to have fun with it. And that's like, to me, when you bought her, I'm like, yes, she just wants to have fun. I mean, like you have with the Mustangs, watching you with your Mustangs is like watching a mom play with her kids out in the yard, you know, like it's just such a loving and touching and sweet way that you come to this. And that is what I saw with you and Wendy. So I'm super excited you have her. I'm super excited to follow along. Are we going to see you in Kentucky next month?
Fingers crossed. But yeah, B, List of War Quality, AKA B, is feeling really well. And she's been doing really good. We've been in the top lately, so I feel like she's come out swinging this year. And I'll have Fletch there doing the demo. Awesome. And we'll see Wendy. I think she'll actually be fun to learn a little bit, do a little bit more liberty work with her too. And it's funny that you said the whole mama thing, because we were asked, what word would your horses call you? And for all the competitors, and I was like, the only thing I can think of is that mine say mama. Like whenever my old Mustangs see me, it feels like they're like mama. And so it kind of felt like that a little bit. It's gonna sound cheesy, but honestly, on that third day when she saw me and she trotted up and she's like, hey, she probably wasn't mama, it's like, hey friend, let's play, you know, type of thing. So anyhow, it was a pretty amazing experience. Yeah.
That's what we want. That is what we want. We want our horses to see us and turn around and come towards us and not be like, oh God, then walk away, you know? So you're doing something right.
I've had my horses turn around and go, oh God, she's here.
So. Yeah, but this one didn't. So perfect. Well, Lisa, it has been just awesome having you on. And thank you for walking us through it while you're sitting on a horse. I appreciate it. And we'll come watch your demo in Kentucky. And good luck.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Even under the best circumstances, travel is stressful for horses. We've all been there, stuck on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. You can make the journey knowing that US Rider is there for you. Get peace of mind on the road with US Rider's nationwide 24/7 roadside assistance coverage for both you and your horse. Join today at usrider.org.
Well, I know some of you will remember, and many of you were not listening in 2010, but before I started this show, I added one to the network called The Western Radio Show. It was hosted by Tammy Srantz, by the way, who now runs Road to the Horse, and Alan Moorhead. It ran for 4 years, but the Western world, I think we can safely say, Alan, wasn't quite ready for podcasts yet back in 2010. More so now, Alan Moorhead is here. Hey, Alan.
How you doing?
Good. And we had listeners, some of our auditors said, what's Alan up to? You got to have Alan back because we're doing this segment on Where Are They Now? So, Alan, where are you now?
Right now, this weekend, I'm happening to be at home and just kind of having the fun doing what it takes to get down the road, still rodeoing, announcing rodeos, a lot of barrel futurities and bull ridings and stuff like that. Was it at a bull riding in Ohio a couple of weeks ago, and had a barrel race down in Unadilla, Georgia this last weekend, and it's Masters weekend, so I'll head over there and watch them hit a few golf balls this week, and then I go to Madison, Wisconsin for their Midwest Horse Fair, and then out to Guthrie, Oklahoma for the first of three of the Ruby Buckle programs as a stallion incentive program in barrel racing that pays a lot of money. And it's really cool to be a part of that.
You know, Alan, I looked you up on AI. I don't know if you've ever looked yourself up on AI, but I looked you. Has you been doing this for 40 years?
Easy that, yeah.
Oh, my God. And you've been did you announce all those 40 years? How'd you get into announcing in the first place?
Well, just out of high school, I worked at a little AM country radio station for a while, and that studio just got kind of small on a guy that's kind of ADHD in the first place. And way back in the day, I had an uncle that had some ponies and horses and stuff and kind of rode like that. And when I was dating my wife now, Angie, she had Tennessee Walking Horse, a couple other deals, and after we got married, we just kind of started getting into the horse deal. And I was running a horse show facility there in North Augusta, South Carolina, called the Hippodrome, which was the housing facility for the Augusta Cutting Futurity for many years, which I guess that's kind of where I kind of got started announcing. But working that, I was booking shows, you know, to lease the facility for shows and stuff. And South Carolina Palomino Association was having a show, and that Friday morning, the producer came to me and says, because you know how it is when you're talking to somebody, you talk about your background. I told him I was in radio and stuff, and you know, we had horses, and my wife was showing some paint horses at the time. And he came to me and says, my announcer just called, and they had a death in the family, he can't come, could you announce my show for me? And I did, and it kind of started from that. And Lord, I don't know exactly what year that was. That would have been 89 or 90, somewhere in there.
Do you know how many thousands of shows you've announced over the years?
No.
Don't you wish you'd kept track of that number, though? By the way, AI Gemini said, Moorhead is arguably the most prominent announcer in the barrel racing world.
Oh, wow. I don't know about that. I just like to have fun at it. And you know, you mentioned that folks might not have been listening in 2000 and what do you say, 10?
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of people now that listen to you guys that weren't even alive in 2010.
Oh, thanks for that.
Just so you know, Jamie.
We do, you still got a gopher problem? We hear about teenagers listening to the show, and we're like, oh, no, they really shouldn't. And you know what's so funny? You did that show with Tammy all those years, and now she's the big boss over at Road to the Horse. I mean,
oh, yeah.
How cool is that?
I see Tammy quite a few times during the year because she also, Mars Publications, Billy Mars, the man who was manager and chairman of the Augusta Cutting Futurity, Creek Plantation, a lot of great cutting horses, newspaper man. He has purchased Road to the Horse. And with that, Tammy was already tied into it with Tootie and that kind of thing. And she kind of held on to her job. She's really production manager for it. And she also does a lot of the media work for the National Barrel Horse Association, which I still work for and announce. And I've been doing that since 1994, taking it back a year or two. So, I see Tammy quite a bit. We have chuckles and fun and all that kind of stuff, because we would always argue on the show about who had the better horse, my announcing horse, Monty, or her shooting horse. And he's still living, too. I talked to her about him the other day.
Wow, I didn't realize that. So, yeah. You know, when we asked this, John Kyle was, I don't know if you know who John Kyle is, but he's a big announcer in the show jumping and eventing world around the world, mm-hmm. A British guy. And we asked him, he's been on the show a number of times too, but we asked him, do you just know these competitors now that you don't have to do any background? You just walk into a show and announce, or do you still do background?
It's a combination of some of that. Somebody told me one time that and they kind of misused the word. You know, you talk about a photographic memory or something like that, and somebody said photostatic, and I said, yeah, stuff kind of sticks to me. and sometimes the things you remember are things you can't really talk about. But yeah, it's a little bit of that.
One time I was at the bar with her and we got so drunk. Yeah, I can't always talk about everything.
Yeah, that never happened. But yeah, it's just that kind of a deal. But there are a few people now who specialize. Barb Dugan, good friend of mine from Texas, is a rodeo secretary. And I mean, she's able to gather some stats for me. And a lot of the guys that announce, this is within the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association that ends up at the National Finals Rodeo. And for, you know, a little bit of monetization to her, she can go in and get my draws, which is cowboys and livestock. And I can get information on each cowboy of what they've done in that season up to where we are. And I can go as far back as 5 years with her on that. And it's really a help. And I still have to look up some standings and things like that and that kind of a thing to make sure we're accurate on that kind of stuff. But to be able to tell, and I guess that's kind of telling the secret, but be able to tell, you know, what they've done previously in the season without having to get into the weeds and spend that a whole lot of time on that. And then, of course, you have to study sponsors and stuff like that. But yeah, that does make it easy. And then the more you travel, the more you know. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's what the good announcers also know about the some of the fun personal stuff of the riders is that you just keep your ear open at the shows for that kind of stuff, or do they just tell you, or just hear through the grapevine?
Well, it's just in having conversations, whether it's two or three guys and gals standing around before the rodeo, barrel racers, breakaway ropers, bronc riders, or something like that, and start telling stories of the road and things like that. And it always ends up, you find out what their favorite place to eat is and things like that. It's just, you know, you kind of try to make it personal as well. And a lot of it with the guys and what Barb does, there's also a little profile in there as well that they kind of fill out through the PRCA. And we have their education, for the most part, family background. You know, dad was a farrier, or dad was a ex-PRCA bronc rider or something like that. That's what got him into it in the first place. But yeah, the interpersonal relationships that you have just from conversations and going to get something to eat. Waffle House is our main deal after a rodeo, you know.
You know, I wanted to ask you too about the Yellowstone effect. What did you see with crowds after Yellowstone became Yellowstone, you know, really popular? Did you see an increase in crowds?
You know, not really. But there has been some of an impact of that, and it's trying to overcome what the real life is about cowboys and cowgirls as to the way a lot of the stuff is depicted on that show. It's just,
you mean there's not been 100 murders in every farm and ranch in America?
No. I mean, you just have to be able to disseminate truth from the fiction and the fantasy of it all and that kind of thing. And it kind of sells, but no, I mean, everything you see on Yellowstone's not real.
What did happen though, coming from the retail and wholesale side, is sales of merchandise, hats and boots and buckles, quadrupled after Yellowstone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's, oh yeah.
We did see a huge change there. You know, the other thing, Team Penning and a couple of those other sports since we talked last have just taken off. I mean,
yes,
just crazy.
Yes, they have.
What's the reason for that? Why do you think those, even Jamie tried sorting cattle and loved it. I mean,
loved it.
Well, because it's easy to do. You it helps to have a horse that comes from roping or reining or cutting or something like that. And sometimes with the cutting horses, you have to overcome the fact that they're trained to lay back off the livestock. You have to teach them to drive back into them and whatever, which sometimes you want to lay back anywhere, that cattle's going to get scattered. But it's just that it's an easier kind of thing to get into. And it's just alluring for people to get in. And then it's fun to watch. It's fun to do too.
Yeah, and Jennifer even tried it. She loved it too. I think everybody that tries sorting loves it. And partly, well, go ahead, Jamie.
To be fair, I did not actually get to try the sport of sorting. Like I'm dying to. I'm trying to find somebody close to me to teach me how to do it. I actually had to like really sort cows, like on a ranch. They were like,
yeah, right.
Bring six at a time around, you know, kind of thing. And so it was that kind of sorting, but I got like the taste of it and why that sport would be so fun, because you just get to, from up above, just kind of be in charge and moving some feet. And it was just a blast. And it just takes a kind of horse that just, I mean, I've never been on a horse that would just walk into a herd of cows, yeah. You know, like it just takes a special kind of horse to do
most
that.
Most of our horses don't do that, Alan. They don't really want to.
We have cows next door. Mine still spook when I ride by.
Oh my goodness. Do you still have some gophers around your place, Jamie?
Well, you know, gophers are an eternal issue everywhere, but I moved out of that farm in Arizona and now I live in Oklahoma. So it's a little more under control here than it was there.
God, I forgot about that, Alan. The fact that you remembered, that's crazy.
Yeah, because where I made up that little fake Facebook thing about the coalition for gophers or something like that.
And yeah.
I forgot all about that.
That Alan, was a fun deal.
Alan, I was going to ask you. Now, apparently, it's not a problem. I think we're about the same age, maybe. But
I'm on Medicare.
You're older. You're older. My memory's going. Your memory must be really good if you're remembering the gophers from Jamie's house 15 years ago.
Well, to be fair, he had a whole lot of fun poking fun at me. So
I did. And I'm just kind of surprised that you would give up gophers over tornadoes.
I mean, it really wasn't my choice. I'd probably take the gophers.
Alan, I'm going to put a link to your website in our show notes. We appreciate you stopping by and letting everybody know how you're doing, that you're still out there doing the rodeos. And probably if you head to a barrel race somewhere in this country, you're going to hear Alan. Right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's just a fun kind of deal.
Well, Alan, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. Well, it's time for This Day in Equine History. And today
it just makes me dance. I just move.
We're going back to March 28th of 1974, not too far back. And that's the day that they discovered the terracotta horses in China. It was the most significant horse tomb in history. Farmers digging a well near Xi'an, I don't know how to say that, in China discovered the first fragments of the terracotta army. I knew about the terracotta army. You've seen pictures of it. It's 8,000 soldiers' statues. But I didn't realize there were also 500 life-size terracotta horses. And 100.
I don't know anything about this at all. I'm going to have to Google.
Look it up. It's incredible. And they found 130 chariots as well. They're statues, and they represent the heavenly horses of the, I don't know how to say any of the Chinese words, one of the dynasties. They estimate that this was done in honor of the horses and the army that was about 221 before Christ, so 221 BCE.
Did they pluck all these statues out and move them, or are they just like unearthed?
I think that's where they found them. Yeah. So, and there's tons of them. And you see the pictures, it's incredible. And they're
full, I see people, but I don't see horses.
I didn't see the horses either, but apparently there's 500 of them there. And I didn't know that. And look, I have this now.
Next story. I love it.
Yeah, I got
it.
This one in there for you. This next one's for you especially. On March 29th, 1917, the legendary Man of War was foaled at Nursery Stud in Lexington, Kentucky.
You're hitting me right in the chest right now, man. I have four books about him on my shelf right now. He is by far, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it. He's the greatest racehorse of all time. Come at me.
What was the name of the horse that beat him in his only loss?
Listen here. Man of War was carrying 130 pounds and Upset was carrying 115 pounds. That's the first thing. And then that was back in the days where they had the barriers. And at that point, the guy wasn't pulling the barrier, and Man of War plunged and he had to turn him around. And so Man of War's butt was to the barrier when the barrier went off. It was BS. And so here we go. He lost by a nose.
What was
to
the,
a nose to the horse named Upset.
You must have read all those books so you know about his win at the Lawrence Realization, which was the name of a race. I had the to look Lawrence it up. It was a stakes race at Belmont Park. But it was in 1920. Do you know about that race?
I don't. Tell me about it.
He won by 100 lengths.
Of course he did.
Yep, that was at the Lawrence Realization.
I knew he did what he won. I was going to say, I couldn't have named that race for sure.
I don't know if that
was... No, he embarrassed everybody. Yeah. Like, he embarrassed everybody.
He did. And of course, that's why
horses today don't carry 130 pounds. And Man of War race like every other week. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Who was the other horse? You're still mad she lost once?
Listen, I think blame, that horse blame can just suck it. The whole thing. Don't get me started. Why are you pushing buttons and then ending the show? I'm done. Man of War.
Anyway, that's it for today. I have a quote for you and I want you to guess who said it.
Is this quote called Glenn is a jerk who tries to fire me up before then leaving me to my own devices?
Auditors, hang on. She ought to be in rare form for the Vo show. Who said the quote, a horse is dangerous at both ends and uncomfortable in the middle? Do you know who said that quote?
Either Chad or Glenn.
I don't know if he was a horse husband, but that quote was by Ian Fleming, James Bond, the writer James Bond. Ian Fleming said that quote. He hated horses, apparently, and was known to just despise horses. So there you go.
There's a line in Ted Lasso where she's like, it's kind of like riding a, or Ted says, it's kind of like riding a horse. If it's comfortable, you're probably doing it wrong. I'm like, you're all doing it wrong. Hey, there's Alex. Hey. Oh, my blood is...